Hello and welcome to the Middle East Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Middle East and author of the weekly Central Asia and Focus newsletter. The topic today is the rights of disabled people in Central Asia. The topic's been receiving more attention than was previously the case for the first decades of independence, but that's not to say all the challenges are being resolved. There are still problems with access for all to public places and obstacles in education and employment. What is being accomplished and what remains to be done to make Central Asian countries inclusive for everybody? To discuss all this, I'm joined by Zeynep Dikanbayeva, Program Manager and Lawyer of the NGO Parents of Children with Disabilities, or ARDI, in Kyrgyzstan, who has been working to implement social and legal projects for the disabled. Medina Karsakpayeva is a disability inclusion specialist from Almaty, Kazakhstan, who is currently working for the UNDP in Kazakhstan to help make all of Kazakhstan accessible for the disabled. And Dilmurat Yusupov, an activist and researcher advocating for disability inclusive development in Uzbekistan, co-founder of the NGO Sharoit Plus, which aims to promote a barrier-free and inclusive society for all disabled people in Uzbekistan. And Dilmurat also writes about inclusion issues for the Uzbek media outlet Gazeta.uz. Thank you all for joining me. And I want to start with the physical barriers. And by this, I mean access to buildings and public transportation. Medina, if I could start with you. A few months ago, there was a video of an Akim, or mayor, of I think it was Taldi Korgan in Kazakhstan, inspecting buildings to see if access for the disabled was suitable. He sat in a wheelchair and tried to use the ramp, but it was too steep and the wheelchair fell over backward and the mayor hit his head on the ground. Can you tell me a little bit about the structures that have been put in place or not put in place that would make it, you know, easier for disabled people to get into buildings, to use public transportation, that sort of thing?
Yes. Hello. Hello, everyone. Thank you for inviting for today's talk. In terms of your question and, you know, issues on infrastructure, physical infrastructure in Kazakhstan, and that case with the Akim of one of the regions, I think this is this practice of showing or indicating or just even proving that we have existing issues for certain people with special needs or physical type of disability is something that we have been using for many years as an exercise, as an evidence for authorities to understand. But no matter, like, regardless of those practices and experience, we still have issues on public transportation. But I think, you know, regardless of this public transportation, other issues, physical environment issues, the main, like, the most important and the biggest challenge is mindset of people that still is not letting authorities and people on higher positions to make relevant improvements, relevant changes, to adapt, you know, and to help people to be more involved in the society.
This is a good point. I'm glad you bring that up. You know, it's certainly, and it's something that we got to get into a little bit more here. And that brings me to another one of my questions, actually, which again is also about, like, the actual physical access. When they're coming up with these plans, you know, for whatever, you know, the slight ramp on the sidewalk, the curb that goes across the road, entrances, buildings, elevators. I remember once you had mentioned also that there was a shortage of taxis, special taxis, right, to get people around who might be bound in wheelchairs or something like that. How much do they include people who are actually disabled when they come up with the planning for this? Do you have any idea? When city authorities or state authorities, government authorities are trying to think about ways to do this, do they actually reach out to people in the disabled community and ask them for advice?
Well, as far as I know, there is a, you know, by each of the city, there is a city council that consists of different experts coming from different areas, including DPOs or disability-related organizations, and sometimes individual experts to be involved in those activities. But, you know, with buildings and putting all the facilities or considering the points on building standards, accessibility standards. But I think the voice of these experts or NGOs involved in the whole process when it comes to accessibility, physical accessibility, is not strong enough, or maybe not united enough to prove that, you know, the standards are not met, and or maybe if not met, but maybe sometimes, you know, these building construction companies and authorities that are responsible for this, they're also not quite knowledgeable. But I think it goes back to the issue of a voice of disabled people, that they cannot prove or explain in more persuasive way to bring those changes. Because we are still not visible enough in the public. This is such an old and, you know, quite annoying fact, but that's the truth.
Okay, thank you. And we'll discuss a little bit more. Seynep, did you want to say something?
Yeah, can I add? I wanted to say that according to the policy, we ratified the convention in 2019. And we have the draft law about accessibility, accessible country, but it is not in the work because the government hasn't adopted it yet. And it is not only the policy problem, it is a problem of the attention to people with disabilities. Because when we see and talk about disability, we see that people with disability need help. Need like assistance, but in the society, or people do not look at people with disabilities as equal citizens, equal people, and therefore the problems of people with disability, including accessibility, is also not very important, not in priority. Why? Because it is like a historical discrimination of people with disabilities in our countries. And I think we need to start with the acceptance of people with disabilities and to work on the human rights-based approach. However, in our countries, the policy and the policy on disability based on charity concepts, based on medical model, and sometimes social model of disability, but not in the human rights approach. And therefore, we have this kind of problem with accessibilities and with other issues based on disability. And when we will transfer from charity concepts and different kind of concepts that I mentioned before, and transfer to human rights approach concept, our policy will change because all of our countries ratified the convention.
Okay, thank you. Dumurad, I want to bring you in here. You've written extensively on this, and of course you're on Twitter all the time too. As far as physical access, I remember that you mentioned that Tashkent's new metro system, for example, has hardly any wheelchair accessible elevators in it too. But you've also pointed out that more than 10% of the populations in Central Asia could be considered disabled people. They are registered as such. That's a pretty significant amount of people. So if you could speak a little bit about some of the, what I was calling the physical barriers, but also something about the fact that how is it that the voice of 10% of the people, maybe 12% of the people, how is that not being heard?
Thank you very much, Bruce, for inviting us to this talk. I just want to add what Madina and Seynep already told us about the concept of disability, because it's really important to understand this. We ratified the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities last year, I mean, in Uzbekistan, and Kyrgyzstan did it in 2019, and Kazakhstan did it earlier. And as Seynep was saying, the understanding of disability is very kind of charity-based. But if you look at the convention, disability, it says that disability is not just physical impairments, like, or disability is not just in the body of a human, of a person. Disability is an evolving concept which results in the interaction of three things, like impairments, like bodily functions of people, and attitudinal and environmental barriers. And as Madina was also saying, the attitudes are the important part, and without changing attitudes, we won't be able to change the environment. And you said that there are 10 or 12% of people with disabilities in the world, but according to the WHO, there are about 15% of the world population has some form of disability. But if you look at the statistics, I mean, I was really amazed to learn about, for example, I've been to Kazakhstan recently, to Almaty, and I was learning more about disability and persons with disabilities living in Kazakhstan. And you know that Kazakhstan's population is like almost double less than Uzbekistan's population, but they have almost like 700,000 persons with disabilities living there. But we have the same number. So what's the problem here? Is it the problem that we don't take into account many persons who are still out of the system? So I think this is just the case because, I mean, I don't really believe in the official data, and the Uzbekistan, I think it's hiding a lot of people, a lot of children and adults with disabilities who are still not registered with the system. And the metro, we are building new metro stations in Tashkent, the overground railway stations. And it's interesting that I understand maybe the metro stations that were built during the Soviet times, like underground stations, it would be difficult to adapt them to the needs of persons with disabilities and those with reduced mobility. But if you look in the new stations, everyone would have assumed that the new stations would be accessible. But in practice, they turned out to be not really accessible. They didn't install elevators at all of the new stations. And even those elevators that are in place, they are out of order. So they are not working. Or they are closed. So even the new metro stations are being not accessible for people with disabilities in Tashkent, unfortunately.
Okay, let's get into some of this problem about why people are not seeing or hearing the disabled, and you know, this is something that probably starts at an early age. You know, I know that Dilmurad, you've been on the show before, and we've talked about the situation in schools. Are schools like in Uzbekistan, for instance, are they still to some extent segregated? Are there schools where people with disabilities go, and there's schools where other children go, or do they mix?
In our countries, we have boarding schools. We have boarding schools for people with hearing and visual impairments. And we have like boarding houses for people with disabilities. And we have also special schools for those who have mental disabilities. We also have some cases and where children and people with disability have home education and homeschooling. And we have very few amount of people who study at ordinary and comprehensive schools. But in those schools, children and people with disabilities don't have facilities to study there. If they can study academically, they can serve by themselves without any assistance. They can study. But for instance, this situation a little bit improved. They have like a personal assistance and help from a teacher, and they have some individual educational plan for some projects and from some inclusive programs and projects. Maybe they have some special and educational materials, but it's not broadly used and approved by the Minister of Education, unfortunately. And I ask why? Because, you know, disability, it's still like an illness, like a sickness. It's still like abnormal, and by the psychological aspect, disability is not people with disability like people who has some diseases. So like, and people say, oh, you have a physical disability, you have a mental disability, for instance. It is strange, and people, they cannot accept. And for instance, we are very far from a universal design. We are very far from a universal concept that everybody is humanly equal. It is fortunately speaking, but practically we are still isolated from the incorrect and wrong concept that people with disability different from the ordinary ones. Unfortunately, it still exists, but step by step we work that attention to people with disability will be much better, that based on the human rights approach, and we have lots of activities, leaders that show good patterns that change this attitude to people with disabilities from sick people to equal people that have the same rights. But these changes comes quite slowly, to be honest. But we hope that because we ratify CRPD, these concepts will be changed because we have a strong civil society and our government try to hear our voice. For instance, when we drafted that situation about people with disabilities in our country, our recommendation also was accepted by the government, and for instance the law of regulation of bringing the wheelchair included our recommendation how to regulate this this situation of bringing wheelchair and other technical supports to people with disabilities. It has become more clear right now. And I'm very happy that our voice also accepted by the policy level, and also we can influence on this level by working with the government in the cooperation. However, the situation is not a very strongly changed even after the ratification. And I think it is because of the pandemic situation that we are faced on. But we hope that it will be much better if we will be strongly unified with every person with disabilities and work in cooperation with each other. For instance, right now we work with a draft law of education, and I gave the article about how to education for people with disabilities, and not only for children with disabilities, has to be regulated by the law. And I hope and this version of the law was accepted by the parliament. And we now discussed and make some changes on this draft law. And I'm very happy that we have such kind of opportunity to work with the government, with the parliament, to bring out the inclusiveness, human rights approach to the policy of to the disability policy, to make the situation much better.
Okay, great, thank you. That's encouraging. Medina, I want to hear your experience. You have a degree. You even studied outside the country, in Hungary, if I recall. What's your experience with the education system in Kazakhstan and the lack of inclusivity? And is it different, you know, when you left the country and studied? Was it a different feeling?
Yeah, it was actually. The other day I was recalling the memories of, you know, studying abroad. And one thing I can, like, if I would describe the experience or difference of being and studying abroad and my current reality in Kazakhstan. I think this is something like I had a trip to the future where most of the things are adapted, but the most importantly, I felt acceptance. And I absolutely, sometimes I even forgot about my condition because I use a wheelchair. Obviously, this is too visible. But, you know, when you have all the facilities and again acceptance of different places, starting from university personnel, your fellow students, and this is really a huge impact. It makes you grow and change mindset, I think, That's why I call it a trip to the future, where everything is quite developed. And now I see in Kazakhstan we are gradually, of course gradually, because we are quite a young country, as they say, and we also ratified the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities a few years ago. So yeah, and just a few points to I wanted to mention on, you know, invisibility of disabled people in the community, general community. I think this is also because of lack of experience from both sides. Like, ordinary people do not know how to interact with us, and we from our side also do not know, in most of the cases, people with disabilities, children, young adults, teenagers, sometimes they lack in essential communication skills. They do not know how to communicate about their differences. Sometimes people get aggressive or like too sad and frustrated because of the real challenges that they face on everyday basis. So I think that's the part of the issue. In terms of opportunities or good sides, good points of this disability inclusion, in Kazakhstan, on the level of higher education, we do not have a high number of students involved at university programs, those with disabilities, but we have a like developing practice of resources centers by the universities where students could go and ask for assistance. Yeah, I hope this will be continuous practice in Kazakhstan and then spread across the region.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope so too. Thank you very much. Dilmurad, you know, the education system, it seems like if you're going to confront the problem of what's now the separation somewhat in society of disabled people from other people, that, you know, the education system is probably a good place to start. Let's face it, you know, preconceptions, prejudice, things like that. These are things that are inherited or that are, you're taught. You know, they're not things that come naturally to you. Is the education system in some way, in some sense, failing a lot of these people because it is not inclusive? I mean, if the schools were open, if they're to everybody, as long as, you know, they can keep up with the schoolwork, you know, why not have people with disabilities in the school? And then everyone mixes with each other then, and it breaks down a lot of the walls that have been built up over the years because you see these people and you interact with them. What's your thought about that?
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. I agree that education is one of the most important factors in disability inclusion, because many things, like if children with disabilities are segregated from the early start, other children won't see them. I mean, this is pretty obvious that we need to be inclusive from the early start. But the problem with it in Uzbekistan is we have three different ministries, with the Ministry of Preschool Education, the Ministry of Public Education, the Ministry of Higher and Secondary Specialized Education. And we should have inclusion at all these levels. But the problem here is there is lack of interagency communication. And I can see that the tendency at the preschool education system is more of segregation. So they are creating like specialized kindergartens for children with disabilities. They call them IMCON now, and they provide kind of rehabilitation services there. It's really good, but the idea of like segregating children based on their impairments, like their conditions and their health, are kind of, it's totally wrong, I think, because as you rightly said, and then our colleagues said, children should be educated, should be together from the early point. But my interesting observation is that we have these specialized boarding schools for children with sensory impairments, for blind and visually impaired children, for deaf and hard of hearing children. And there is a tendency within these institutions for defending this way of receiving education. I can see that many teachers at these institutions are sometimes against inclusive education. They think that children, for example, with total blindness, they are well suited to receive education in a specialized setting rather than in an inclusive, like a mainstream setting. So this is quite interesting because the overall like general trend in the world is for inclusive education, but sometimes even persons with disabilities themselves, they say we are better off when we are together with like-minded people, or like so sometimes they are for segregation themselves, which is interesting. But in general, there have been some move towards inclusive education in Uzbekistan, but mostly it's at the general education, like secondary education level. And they have been introducing like inclusive classes within mainstream schools. So imagine a mainstream school, and there is a specific class within a mainstream school where children with disabilities would go. And this was a very ridiculous from my view, because you need to make the whole school inclusive rather than making a separate class inclusive. So I think the whole understanding of inclusion, like the concepts on the principles of inclusion, flawed, like in the context of Uzbekistan. And they're trying to see the international experience, but I think because of the lack of involvement of disabled people's organizations and parents of children with disabilities and children with disabilities themselves, those experts like without disabilities are deciding on behalf of these groups. So I think the biggest problem is here with the lack of involvement of persons with disabilities and their communities themselves in the decision-making process.
Can I add, I think the inclusive education, it is a very complex problem, because I'm also against about special classes, boarding schools, about separation. However, to be honest, in reality, we don't have teachers that enough qualified or skilled to work with children with disabilities or people with disabilities. They're afraid to work with children with disabilities because they don't have enough qualification, enough knowledge, even they have some basic information about what is inclusive education. But in practical way, they don't have enough materials for working, enough equipments for working with children with disabilities. And you know that disabilities are very diverse. They have sensory disability, physical disability, mental disability, and mixed of these disabilities. Therefore, it is very difficult to develop the conditions and facilities for all. Therefore, they are the state very afraid to start this work on stable on inclusive education because of this problem. In our country, we have schools that in one classes there are 40 students, and they don't have enough facilities for ordinary students in the class. And they said that it is very, very difficult to make to pay attention to the children who have a disability, to work with this child or these children, and I also understand that we can create an inclusive education in one time. However, I think if we will have a good inclusive education policy, a good education legislation based on inclusiveness, and if we will have a good program on this, we have inclusive education development program, if we will have a financial technical support, and we will have a good view, as Adil Murad said, about inclusive education, step by step solving the problems that I mentioned before, we will educate the teachers, and we will give them a good and right concept of inclusive education, and we will give the facilities. And as Adil Murad said, we will have not only one class that separated from the whole school, but we will adapt the system where inclusive education will be in everywhere, in every classes, and children with disabilities and other children who have a special education needs will be included into educational system and have the equal opportunity and right to have education. However, because of the problems and issues, we are quite far from the inclusive education that we wanted to have in our countries.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sorry, I keep interrupting you. Just a few comments to add. How I see this, you know, this is common practice, at least on the level of secondary school education, inclusive education, so-called inclusive education, and the practice of setting one separate inclusive classroom within the whole school. Probably this is just the way, as we are still, as a country, we are still learning to understand the whole concept. And in any of our countries, I think there is no certain set of, you know, not set, but a certain understanding, the definition of inclusive education, because people, not only teachers, but regular public, they don't really understand. And as for teachers, I think on top of those issues as lack of qualification, lack of resources, materials, whatever, and there is also lack of motivation for teachers to work with these kids, children, because in terms of salary, they do not get like increased or different additional payment to work specifically with this child, to pay relevant attention, to have assistant, to work on IEPs, individual educational plans. So this is another point of the issue.
Uh-huh. Yep.
At least for teachers at school.
Yep. Great point. Great point. And I'm sorry I have to interrupt for 1 second, but I have to do my midway usual recap here. So this is the Medjlis podcast, and today we are talking about inclusion for disabled people in Central Asia. I'm joined by Medina Karsakpaeva, who is disability inclusion specialist from Almaty, Kazakhstan, and is currently working for the UNDP in Kazakhstan to help make all of Kazakhstan accessible for the disabled. Dilmurat Yusupov is an activist researcher advocating for disability inclusive development in Uzbekistan, co-founder of the NGO Shorayut Pos, which aims to promote a barrier-free and inclusive society for all disabled people in Uzbekistan. And Dilmurat also writes about inclusion issues for the Uzbek media outlet Gazeta.uz. Zeynep Diakonbayeva, program manager and lawyer of the NGO Parents of Children with Disabilities, or ARDI, in Kyrgyzstan, who has been working to implement social and legal projects for the disabled. And I'm Bruce Pannier, the host of the Medjlis podcast. Okay, Medina, and actually all of you have been bringing up a lot of good points. Okay, you got segregated schools. Sometimes there's a special course or that has to, you know, where the all the children get to mix together. What I'm curious about, and there's kind of two parts to this question. One would be, is there a body or government agency in all your countries that actually oversees this? Because it seems to me the solution to this problem is to bring the teachers who are already involved in special ed and integrate them into the regular school system along with their students. And then you solve all the problems at once. You bring in teachers who are already on the payroll for these specialty schools, and bring them into the schools as teachers there, and then you bring their students in with them, right? Wouldn't that work? I mean, is there an agency that oversees these kind of things and considers maybe this is one of the solutions? Anyone who wants to start?
No, I don't think it will work. Why? Because also from the special schools and boarding schools, teachers, they use old concept of education, charity concept. Therefore, we need to use them also because they have experience of working with children with disability, but they need to re-educate it about inclusive education, about human rights, about international standards, and how to use these new and innovative methods of working with these children. Because even they will be transferred from their boarding schools or special schools, they will use their old methods of working with children with disabilities. And it won't be inclusive education and inclusiveness.
As per Kazakhstan, I think the main body is the Ministry of Education, of Science and Education, specifically the part of the ministry that is responsible for school education. When it comes to school teachers, there is also a practice of Kazakhstan to provide short courses on inclusive education, for example, for teachers that would go and, you know, attend those courses. But in reality, they do not get enough of knowledge and practical instruments how to implement and support inclusion. As for special schools, special boarding schools, I also had experience working or volunteer for those schools. And as Zeynep just mentioned, they specifically in those special schools, special boarding schools, what I noticed from work with kids there, that the children, the teachers do not really, you know, seem to be interested in bringing knowledge to the kids. They are not motivated. They are like just following the regular program as for everyone, but with like slower speed. So, you know, children in special schools, they seem to be a bit, I mean, they have delayed educational program. And for one more point on homeschooling, as I had to go through homeschooling for 11 years, and this is also something that teachers also lack. And, you know, as I was lucky enough many years ago when I had homeschooling experience, because my teachers appeared to be responsible and like passionate about their subjects. But nowadays, what I see is that teachers are not interested in visiting children who are on homeschooling mode. And they try to skip those lessons. They have this, prejudice towards children. So, for example, if you use a wheelchair, there is an automatic prejudice that you definitely have to have mental issues that would, you know, impact your studies. That's like part of the issues on implementing and having inclusive education in place at school context.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, this kind of gets back to the point that these kind of things are inherited or picked up in an early age when they really don't, there's no connection between your mental faculties and your ability to walk or something, right? So Dilmurad, you know, same question for you about the state agencies and what are there. But I mean, you had also made the point earlier that there seems to be some competition that special education teachers that or at least there is a section of the special education sector that seems to believe that it's their territory and they're unwilling to integrate or that it's not desirable for them in some form. Is there a way that you can see to get them to have more time with their students, with the students in the other schools?
Yeah, I think on the one hand, I agree with them because mainstream schools are not ready to accept children with disabilities. And in terms of the staff shortages and the professional training of the staff members and the environment at schools. So from many kind of points, I agree that they're concerned. I understand their concern about moving their children to mainstream schools. But on the other hand, I see that they also have some kind of benefits within the school system, like specialized school setting, because the salaries of those who are working at specialized boarding schools are much higher, for example, than salaries at mainstream schools. So there may be kind of a personal interest and lack of motivation for inclusive education on this side. But in terms of the agencies, as I already mentioned, there are three ministries, and I don't see any communication. For example, if a child with disability is finishing preschool education, he should be well prepared to enter secondary education, primary secondary education, secondary education. And then after completing secondary education, he should go to the university. But as maybe Madina will also add on this and say that our universities are not ready for inclusion. We have introduced like a 2% quota for persons in first and second disability group to enter higher educational institutions. They introduced this policy, but the universities are not ready to accommodate the needs of students with disabilities. So, and in general, if you look at in this, there is no one agency or like one ministry For example, Ministry for Social Protection or Ministry for Social Services, that would oversee these connections, these communication problems within these agencies, or coordinate all of the activities in one, all of the policies in one agency. After the ratification of the convention, we established the Interagency Council on Disability Affairs, which includes all of the ministries on relevant issues, disability-related issues, but I don't actually see the effectiveness of this body. And there is one agency on the development of medical and social services in Uzbekistan, but again, this agency has a very medicalized approach to disability. They usually spend a lot of money and resources on rehabilitation centers. They try to cure disabilities. So they lack a very social approach to inclusion of children and adults with disabilities. So these are main problems, I think.
Can I add something? Is it, if it's possible? Absolutely. You know, I'm very happy that we, whatever we have, nevertheless, we have so much problem in education, in transportation system, and etc. We see it in the Central Asian country, we see Dilmurat, Madina, and those who speak English fluently and got a good education and work in the international system and work for improving the situation in their countries. It is wonderful. And I hope that, and I think that our countries must use and should use these kind of persons as a key person to improve the situation in our countries. Because Madina and Dilmurat know and knowledgeable and have experience how to improve this disability situation in their countries, in our countries. However, I think the problems still remain, because this kind of key person and resources person are not used fully in our countries. Because, as I said, we have a lot of problems in our countries regarding to this education, etc. You see, Madina and Dilmurat have very good educational level and also studied abroad and get a good for English level. It is very important to use this kind of people and to see this kind of pattern in fully extent. And I hope this program will help us to show the governments and the two states that only people with disabilities, leaders, can change the situation, not money, not power, and etc., but this kind of knowledgeable and experienced people can prove the situation.
I just wanted to add on this, saying that I agree with you, because I just don't want to show off our skills and knowledge, but the problem with these institutions, the agencies, is they are led by those people who were educated during the Soviet times. For example, if you look at the Agency for the Development of Medical and Social Services in Uzbekistan, there is a person who has recently said that children with Down syndrome cannot be educated, or like they have similar faces. What they can do is that they can learn some self-care at home, and that's it. These are exactly the same words that were told at the press conference by the director of this agency. So now I think the problem is with the mindset of these bureaucrats, who still think that disability is a lack of working capacity, disability is something negative, disability is a medical problem. So I think the whole problem comes from this mindset, from these bureaucrats who sit in their chairs for a long time, who don't listen to younger generation, who don't open themselves to an international kind of education. So I think I agree with Zeynep that we need more young voices and international voices within these institutions as well.
Okay, thank you. Okay, and we're getting close to the end of time, but That's a good transition into how I want to finish this up. All of you, I'd like you to respond to this. If you could give your governments one recommendation for the next step they should take to make to progress in the inclusion in the country, what would that recommendation be? Medina?
Yes, thank you. Well, I think my recommendation is connected to the voice of disabled people, professionals in different areas with different types of disabilities, bringing them to the decision-making process in any of the fields and treating them equally as everyone else. I think that's the most important to build a real inclusive society in terms of disability inclusion. So the voice of disabled people need to be heard.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, Dilmurad, what recommendation? What's the next step the Uzbek government should take?
Yes, I'm currently working on a project to promote disability inclusive employment, actually. And I found a really good solution for promoting inclusion. As you know, there is a saying by Gandhi saying, if you want to change the world, you should start with yourself. So I think these agencies, they should become inclusive themselves. For example, if you take this agency for the development of medical and social services, they should include a person like Madina, for example. She is now working for UNDP as a disability inclusion expert. And I think experts on disability inclusion are disabled people themselves. They should be experts. They should be involved in the work of these agencies. They should be at the heart of this decision-making process. They shouldn't be treated as patients or recipients of services. They should be subjects of the decision-making process. And I think this is the first and the most important recommendation that I would give to the government. Thank you.
Great. Senep?
Yes, I agree with my colleagues. And my recommendation in every state agencies, in every ministries and agencies, has to be a person with disabilities as a counselor. Because I was an ex-advisor of the Minister of Education, and I see how it works good. And we could develop the inclusive education strategy, and it was really good, and it really works. And the second, my recommendation is to analyze the policy regards to CRPD. What is the situation in status quo, and what CRPD says, and how we need to come step by step to the human rights approach policy on disability, how we need to change our legislation to make sure that our policy on disability match international standards, CRPD, and inclusiveness in our disability policy. I think it is very important. And the third, my recommendation is to involve people with disabilities, parents who have children with disabilities, in every circle of making this policy from beginning, start from planning, and ending as a monitoring of this process. And in these tasks, the problems and the policy and the pictures of disability in our countries will be improved, I think. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. And thank you all for being on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time to be on and expressing your views on this. It's obviously a hugely important topic, and discussion is at least a start of hopefully change in what's happening in all your countries. So thank you, Dilmurad and Zeynep and Medina. I appreciate it very much. And a big thank you, of course, to Nathan Shoemaker, our Medjlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. I'm Bruce Panier, the host of the Medjlis podcast. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Medjlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting RFERL's website at rferl.org. Thank you very much, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.